Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of No Plans to Merge. This week we're joined by David Hemphill, the one and only. The internet latency was pretty bad for the beginning of this episode, so there's going to be some people talking over each other and some awkwardness, so apologize in advance. Enjoy the episode.
Caleb, what's up?
D. Cole, how's it going?
It is going well. Also, we have a third member of this very good Zoom call.
We do. This is a first time for us.
It is.
But we had to do it. We are joined today by the lovely, wonderful David Hemphill. Hello, David Hemphill.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
No, sir. Thank you.
So, David Hemphill, you're a little bit about David Hemphill. You wrote pretty much the whole front end to Nova. Is that right?
That's right.
That's right. And Horizon, too?
Yeah, the original version of Horizon.
Okay.
Front end. Yep.
And you have a bunch of SaaS apps, a couple SaaS apps. CronDog, right?
Mm-hmm. CronDog and Push Silver.
CronDog. Okay. CronDog.
Yep. CronDog and
Push Silver. And yep. You wrote Beard CSS, which was the original Tailwind.
It was a predecessor.
Yeah, that's right. And you helped build Tailwind. So there's that.
I did just enough on Tailwind to get my face on the front page until Adam took it off.
You're still in the config file though, right?
Yeah, I'm in the package.
Is that gonna stay in there? Right, okay. Nice, that's all that matters. Sweet. So we have you on today because I want you to convince us to whip. And you're currently wearing a hat that says whip, WIP. And for listeners following along, whip as in work in progress, and David Hemphill, this is one of those things that I wasn't aware that this was your stance necessarily. I just saw a tweet or two, a screenshot of all your commits in a project, and they all said three letters, whip. And I'm like, this dude's crazy. Is this like a joke? Like, he's joking. And then in a couple other tweets where you started repping it like it was like the way you do things. And then I started to get really interested. And then I saw a product description for your new whip hat that's like something about like if your team's still writing commit messages, like unnecessary overhead, something like that. And I'm like, I need to talk to this guy and get to the bottom of this.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what I even wrote on my whip hat, which they haven't actually dropped yet. But basically, whip, yeah, it started out as a joke just from noticing all the projects that I worked on that just had copious amounts of whip commits. And it sort of evolved, or maybe just like, yeah, it sort of evolved into kind of a philosophy, really. You know, it kind of began with this thing that I say sometimes is that, you know, there are only two git commit messages you actually need. And that's the first one's init, you know, the first commit with all the framework shit that you don't actually put any code on. And then whip, which is all your code. And, you know, like any joke, I like to blow it out of proportion and kind of use it to troll communities.
Okay, so talk me through this, right? So here's the value of commit messages, right? That commit messages are valuable in the following way. Number one, they tell you what a piece of code is. So you're still doing pull requests though, right?
Yeah. So
and the pull requests are just full of whip commits.
Yeah. And the occasional style CI merge and the merging from master or whatever.
And so then all of those whip commits get squashed in the PR and you just end up with a pull request commit name.
Yeah, sometimes. Depends on the project.
Okay, so sometimes you're just whipping straight to master.
Yeah.
God damn it. All right. So here, see, I feel like if it was all pull requests and all the whips were disappearing, then I would be fine with it. But the whipping to master, it just seems very, very bad.
Yeah, it's cowboy, man. Real cowboy.
Dude, it's rough. So here's the two things. So I'm gonna let you talk me off of these. But here's the two things that commit messages do. Number one, it lets you go back and like if you have to like go find a bug or go find like where a conflict came from or like any of that shit, you're like, oh, it was probably in the commit called like introduce a bunch of conflicts or whatever, you know? And to me, the better thing that they do is like they let me see like, oh, remember all that work on like refactoring the authentication? Like, what week did I work on that? Oh, like, let me just scroll down the list of commits to like refactor the authentication. And I see it was on April 3rd or whatever. And now I know, like, I don't know. Those are the things that are valuable to me. Why commit even? Like, it's just whip, you know? Just well, yeah. Why not just like git commit amend the init commit all the time?
That would be great, actually, I think.
And then git push force.
Yeah, force that everything is... to have like the first commit. Every commit is the first commit. That'd be great, honestly.
Oh my god.
I guess I don't have that many problems where I have to go back and look at the code. It's kind of like down methods and migrations. I just never use them. You know?
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's pretty infrequently. Like, I could probably count them on one hand the amount of times I've had to go further back than the past few. Like sometimes I have to like not squash, but I'll revert a commit, but it's usually like the latest commit that I just did. You know, undo a commit or whatever. But going back farther and like reading and seeing what one does, like that's based on the fact that each one says exactly what it does. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm pretty bad about like if I do a bunch of related work, I write compound commit messages a lot because I'm like, well, I could write one commit message, but this actually does two things. So I could split it into two and manually like pick out the changes, but one file might have changes from both like domain, you know, concepts.
Mm-hmm.
So I just put like an and symbol in there, and I don't know. I guess I commit a lot, but it's not. I don't know. I'm not super. My commits aren't perfect, and I think unless your commits are perfect, then the whole promise of being able to just kind of hop around and, you know, pick stuff out, cherry pick stuff, revert stuff distantly, stuff like that, just kind of dissolves. So,
dude, but it's not like a binary thing, right? It's like it's a spectrum from like I have no commits and everything is just amended to whip, to like I have perfect Linus Torvalds commits and I can just like cherry pick features out and build my own Linux distro out of them, right? Like you can be somewhere along the spectrum. Like you can git bisect even if your commits aren't perfect, or you know, something like that.
So, but the biggest question is how often do you use those messages? And for real, Deco, like how often are those messages helpful to you in programming? Like when was the last time that you used
them? I think you're framing the question wrong. I don't think it's how often do you use them. It's like how often do you use the fire extinguisher in your kitchen? Like almost never, except when I did, it saved my house from burning down.
Have you saved your house from burning down with the fire extinguisher of
no, but I did actually. I did save the New Orleans Zoo from burning down one time with a fire extinguisher.
Wow,
I was in the fish taco industry. We were selling fish tacos at an event at the New Orleans Zoo, and the neighboring food vendor had like a 4 foot tall propane tank. And it started spurting fire out the top.
Oh.
And I was like, this propane tank is going to explode. All of us are going to die. And like a lot of things are going to burn. And I like leapt into action and jumped over like there were like these like guardrails. I like jumped over a guardrail with a fire extinguisher and put it out.
Mid-flight fire extinguisher.
It was like one of the most clutch moments of my entire existence.
That's pretty sweet. So do you think that it's reasonable, now that you've done that once, to carry around a fire extinguisher like with you, like in a backpack everywhere you go?
No, but everywhere that I am cooking outdoor with propane, I'd probably have a fire extinguisher with me.
So the cost of having a fire extinguisher around when you're cooking, like they're just in kitchens and they're in houses, so that's done. Like, what if you had to go out and buy a fire extinguisher every time you were going to cook?
What if you just put it in your car?
Right. Well, you can't just put the work of writing a commit message.
Sure, you can.
In your car, it's not done.
No, it is.
You have to do that work every time.
Yeah, but if you just do it, right, then it becomes a part of your brain. It becomes a part of your hands.
Sure,
and you
but
don't
it's
even
still work that
it.
You're doing.
Yeah, so is putting on underwear every day.
Exactly, and if you can avoid it, you should.
It's hygiene,
I
man.
Don't disagree.
It's hygiene.
Yeah, so I'm pretty on board with this whip thing. The reason I wanted to have you on is because it's one of those things that I see and I'm like, oh, I could see myself doing that. Like, I could go there. Because one, I just sort of tend towards that mentality. Like, anytime somebody's just calling bullshit on something, I'm like, yeah, I want in on that.
Yeah.
So, but I got to check myself and make sure that what we're doing is okay.
I don't know that this is necessarily an original thought, though, because I have always felt that developer guilt, you know, when I didn't use good Git commit messages. You know, sometimes I'm like debugging something at a company, and then it's just like, crap, this doesn't work, or hopefully this works, you know, and eventually get down that debugging train where you're like got 50 commits in the master, it's trying to fix something hot on production. But actually, the framework creator, Taylor, is the one that like really cemented this idea in me from my work with, you know, like I've worked on Forge, Spark, Horizon, you know, all these sorts of things, and they're just littered with whip. And once I embraced the whip, nobody died. You know, there was no fires anywhere. If you broke something, you just fixed it in the next whip. And
oh, that's beautiful. I did not know that.
That's so painful. Oh man. So here's, you gotta work. I'm not gonna start with you gotta. I gotta work from a list of tasks, right? Mm-hmm. Like I've gotta have like nice, clearly defined tasks. Blah 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 blah. And because otherwise, what happens is I get into my code base. I start seeing things that like, oh, I should do something about that.
Yeah.
I get halfway down it. I thrash. You know, I like reinvent providers or something. Mm-hmm. You know, real quick, and then I like move on to some. You know, and like by the end of it, like I've written a ton of code and accomplished no things, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so I have to like have a mind that is structured by like a Trello board or some GitHub issues or something like that, mm-hmm. in order for me to like keep my mind in check and like write little pieces of code that do little things. And like, because I have to do that or else I just like spin completely out into insanity. I think that's why I value commit messages so much, is that they like reflect that order that I entered into the process with. And then if I'm just going to whip, 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 there's no reflection of like, of what those correspond to. Like there's no symmetry. Whereas like, if I have like a GitHub issue called like, allow users to join a team.
Mm-hmm.
And then I write the code that allows a user to join a team, and I write users can join a team test, and then it passes, then I just say like git commit you allow users to join a team, and I push, and I'm like, ooh, this beautiful symmetry, like at the beginning there was an issue called this, now there's a test called this, and now there's a commit called this, and it's like this beautiful stream from start to finish.
Yeah, maybe that's like a reflective of my situation, my current working situation, working full-time on Nova, is that when I wake up, I don't necessarily have a big list of tasks that I have to do. Like, I'm starting to bullet journal now just because I want to have, like, the sense of, like, accomplishment and structure, and I can look back at notebooks. But when I wake up in the morning, it's not like I've got to get X, Y, Z done today. It's like, let's see what people are complaining about the most in the help scout or in the issue board. What tickles my fancy today, or what PRs do I need to merge from contributors? And it's sort of like there's a bit of a chaos, or I would like to describe it as like freedom. I just kind of like pick and choose the thing I want to do. But Nova might be a bad example now because we've had to, because of allowing contributors to come in and watch the changes. They want to mm-hmm. see more
commit messages,
more descriptive commit messages.
No way. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I will still whip write to master. If there's something I know absolutely fixes it, I won't even, I'll say whip, and then I'll go manually close the issue that it addresses.
Oh, man. And like
manually respond.
Yeah. Yeah. So what, let's get straight the utilities of commit messages as we see them. So Decol, you just said that, one of the benefits of commit messages is to sort of express your mental like framework for going about a group of tasks.
Yeah, sort of. And to like, to reflect that, like the things I intended to do got done.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Gotcha. Okay. So right. So it's a reflection of your organizational whatever. Right. Okay. And then there's obviously like reading stuff about the code in history with the purpose of either changing something or going and, you know, looking deeper into some change or something like that. Which I think is probably the most obvious, like accepted one. Are there any other here's a utility for me of commits. Well, I guess this is just of commits in general, so it doesn't matter if you're whipping or not. But I you know the Nah alias? Jeffrey's Nah alias, NAH.
Yeah.
It's like a bash. Yeah. It's just like, so people call it different stuff. Everybody's got their own like word for it. Basically, it's like get, I don't
reset
even know
hard.
The actual.
Get reset hard.
Head tilde one or something. It basically takes whatever is in your whatever unstaged files, or I don't know, maybe even staged, like anything that you haven't committed, it just poof, like it just destroys it all. And I use that like a lot, actually. So if I'm working on something, if I'm about to work on something that I want to be able to back out of no matter how far I go, and I'm just kind of unsure about it, I just commit and then I work and then I either not or I commit again. So it's that sort of commit utility that doesn't really matter what the name is. So maybe this isn't even relevant, but it's at least relevant to say, what, why do you commit at all? Like that's a reason for me why I commit. That's a very like real life, I do this all the time thing. Are there any other utility, like benefits of commit messages that you guys can think of?
For a guy who loves naming things so fucking much, you would think you would think that you would enjoy the opportunity to name a piece of work.
Yeah,
you know?
I guess so. I really hate yeah, this is funny. You're right, because like why do I not like calling things data and item and stuff like that? It's like whip is sort of
or hedgehog.
We should take a quick tangent and debut the new
oh my gosh.
Hedgehog.
So
variable.
Someone tweeted, basically a group of hedgehogs is apparently called an array. And so
like by group of he's talking like groups of animals,
yeah,
that have
so like
their
you,
own
like
other,
a pack,
yeah,
or
like
a murder,
yeah,
birds.
You have a flock of right, birds, yeah, and a school of fish. Apparently you have an array of hedgehogs. And so someone was like, so now every item in an array is called a hedgehog. Which is great, because all we had before was item, which is a terrible non-descriptive noun.
Or member.
Member, yeah. And now we have hedgehog, which is equally as meaningless, but more fun.
That's great. Yeah, I hope you use that in your projects.
I think I
will. I'm seeing Sonic the Hedgehog right now in my head.
Uh-huh.
It works.
Nice. Yeah, so so naming things, why would I not want to name this? I remember when I first encountered someone who had a really strong opinion on naming convention for commit messages, and I think this is kind of widely accepted, but commit messages should be imperative and yep. present tense. So yep. where I would do things like, I added this, be like, no, it has to be imperative, meaning like a command, like mm-hmm. add this. So, and the thinking behind that is like, you think of it like, if you apply this commit to your current code, like what would it do to your code if you applied this commit? So a commit as a transformation, not as a log, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, and that really jived with me. I was like, ooh, this is, it's the same feeling I had when I think like Titan was my first introduction to this, or Matt, one of his projects, I submitted a PR and he's like, you have to alphabetize your CSS properties. And I was like, oh, sweet. Like that's great. Like, you just brought order to something that before my brain was going, okay, well, you know, the margins kind of go together, and the paddings, that's kind of related, so that kind of goes together, and then color, but, you know, text color, and then background, wait, but this one's kind of related to this one. Now, where do I put this one? And you know what I'm saying? So you quickly end up in this decision-making tree that's vague and fuzzy and ultimately meaningless. So if we can just alphabetize these things, just say screw it to the order. Like, I found freedom in that. So I found similar freedom in this, like, just go imperative and present tense. But there's still tons of little micro decisions that happen in that naming process of commits. Like, you write, if you test drive something, do you write a separate commit for the tests first? And often, like, I write a little bit of code while I'm writing the test. So do I, like, have to separate those, or is one feature the whole thing? I don't know. There's so many little decisions. And do I call this thing, like, right, if I add a whole test thing in there, do I just say it's the feature, or do I say it's the feature and the tests? And do I say, you know, and like we talked about before, do you include tangential things that you added along the way, or do you, like, not stage them specifically? Like, it's just so hard. And so the concept of being able to just clean whip is like, ooh, that could be super freeing. If I can just, like, justify this enough publicly, then I'll be better off.
Yeah, yeah. Monologue. I mean, developers always want, like, absolutes and heuristics that tell them that they're doing a good job, you know, that are...
Yeah, totally. Yes.
And especially Caleb.
And especially me, yeah.
And within teams, you definitely probably need more order. I don't know what the exact number of team members it is where that becomes more useful. In my opinion, 3 to 5, it doesn't tend to be that, you know, the complexity that the ads and the mental framework you have to maintain that isn't worth the juice, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
But it's all those heuristics and things that we use that make us feel good, eventually they become, like, cemented in people's minds as, like, absolute truths, and they present them as such. And that's kind of like what WHIP is like. WHIP is like an expression of protest against, like, the dogmatism of elite programmers.
That is it.
You know, it's just totally. Like being tired of people telling people how to code as if it's an absolute fact in every situation, from the smallest project to the largest project. You know, but that's me. I've always had a rebellious streak, you know, and I've always kind of been like a contrarian provocateur. Like, one of my bosses described me as, I'm a fish that always likes to swim upstream.
Heard that.
Yeah, that spirit, I mean, that, I think you perfectly captured it. And that was my feeling when I first encountered the WHIP thing. It was like, whoa, this is exactly like that. It asks a question of anyone who gazes upon this proposition. They ask the question, I believe they would, if they're not too defensive to not even ask this question, do you need commit messages? You know, which is a crazy question that you don't think to ask at all. And just the fact that you asked it tickles my fancy.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of when Adam did, like, ZTTP and, like, didn't follow PSR stuff.
Exactly.
And wrote no docs and was just like, if you want to use it, like, read the tests.
Right.
That's the docs. Like, get out of here.
Adam's sort of the great king project. Of that. It,
yeah.
The... Him not using public, I think, was that for me in ZTTP.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was the one thing that I was like, oh yeah, why do I why do all my tests say public function? You know, like, what does the public mean in my test? Is it even, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of those things that embodies that spirit of WHIP. Even though they use actual commit messages on that project,
on ZTTP.
It still embodies the spirit behind it that, especially now with Nova being sort of a higher visibility project, it can prove that all of those best practices, while good and useful, and they're good to learn and have on certain teams, they're not necessarily silver bullets that make your code better, make your product work better, or makes your company work, make more money, and that you can, like, make a successful project being a cowboy programmer or cowboy coder with WHIP. I mean, that's where I find freedom and stuff like that. And I like kind of providing a little bit of a contrast to the absolutes that people present.
Right. Yeah, 100%. So you touched on something with, like, well, I mean, I like the way you put it that, you know, sometimes, you know, you can use those things, but to not consider them silver bullets. I'm hearing a voice in my head listening to this and saying, yeah, but you guys are all Laravel developers, and Laravel developers are all like this because everybody at Laravel at the top, like, you end up out of client work and you're just working on Laravel stuff, and it's all like small isolated projects. And it, you know, like, I'm thinking of, I guess Titan is an agency, and like at Titan I worked on some big projects, but at least right now I don't know, like, I think this is a known criticism of the community, right? Like, Jeffrey Way is teaching everybody, but he's working on one application, Laracasts. Mm-hmm. You know, Taylor, he's working on Forge, and, you know, like, that, mm-hmm, sort of thing. Like, you don't get it, man. Like, you're not in the enterprise. You don't understand. Like, in team scenarios, we can't just be whipping everything. And the fact that you're poisoning the youth is like a danger. So yeah. What do you think about that, like, on teams and bigger groups? And is this a dangerous thing to poison the minds of the youth with?
Can't fight against the youth.
I guess what I'm wondering is, like, can we steel man the argument of?
Yeah, you can. I think you can. I think it's like this. I think youth should be poisoned, and they should enter every enterprise that they enter as, like, little pieces of shit who are gonna, you know, be really annoying and opinionated, and eventually be broken by making stupid mistakes. Like, if their spirit is gonna be broken, it should be broken because, like, they messed up in a big way, right? Mm-hmm. Not because, like, we're gonna preemptively break your spirit just because you're here, you know? Like, I think that's it. And so it's like, yeah, a lot of things I wanted to do when I was young, a young developer, you know, I don't do now because turns out they weren't smart. But those things happened as a result of, like, me breaking production projects, or, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. And so the wisdom only comes from experience. The wisdom doesn't ever come from advice. So if the advice is like, if all the advice that you're hearing on Twitter and stuff is just like, do all of this stuff because it's fun, then you'll go do it because it's fun. You'll break one production project, and then you'll learn which of that advice was wise and which of it was just fun.
Yeah, it's like when everybody was getting into repositories, you know, all of the writing was about, you got to use repositories. It's the biggest thing. I'm like, okay, that sounds official and right. And I used it, and my code got worse mostly. And I still forced it down my project's throat because I wanted to be a good programmer, TM. Right. And my project suffered as a result. And anything like that, you know, using fillable and on your models is another example of stuff. You know, I'm a guarded equals empty array, you know, like, you know, yep. Or any of the things that are coming up, especially with PHP's development, you know, return types, you know, or any criticism of Laravel, like facades and global helpers and stuff like that. Anything like that, it's just like there are scenarios where those don't offer any value to the development process. They sometimes, a lot of times, hurt developer ergonomics, you know.
Yeah.
And so maybe it works for your team, and that's good, and you guys can agree on that. But it's definitely, there's people that are making enough money to survive with, you know, single person or, you know, less than five people teams making a lot of money, just whipping.
Doing whip commits.
Yeah.
That is great. That is dandy. Yeah. Go ahead, Deco.
Some quality rant. I appreciate it.
Totally.
I mean, I have to offer the disclaimer that I'm not a good programmer by any means. So I got my start editing HTML in Notepad on a 486 computer and checking my results the next day at school, because I didn't have a web browser on my computer. Uh-huh. Like, oof. So, you know, and I dropped out of tech school. I don't have a degree, and nice. I haven't worked in a lot of structured team environments. And when I have, I've always been the fish that swims upstream.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I had a team where we were using just plain CSS. And then I started learning about SAS and all these preprocessors, and I just started using them. And I never assumed that I had to ask to do this. But I got raked over the coals and was told never to use SAS again, and don't introduce a new piece of the project because it hurt the whole team, because somebody eventually had to look at my project after I was done with it, and they're like, what is all this code? What is all these, you know, includes and variables and nested CSS crap? And I got in trouble for that kind of stuff. And that stuff always just bothered me. Like these.
Dude, remember back in the day when I inherited so many projects like this where the original developer had installed like lesser SAS.
Mm-hmm.
And then another developer had inherited it and started directly editing the CSS and never compiling.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I inherit it and I'm like, wait. So you're telling me there are SAS files, but I can't trust them. And if I compile them, I'm going to remove 6 months of work.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Oh my God, yeah, it was bad. It was rough.
So yeah, that's funny because in the I could see a meta case that like CSS and SAS are another example of like, why are you using SAS? Like, why don't you just use freaking CSS for your small thing? Like, why do you need your whole build process? But that's another conversation. To your point, this is something that I was actually thinking about in the shower before getting on this call. My hair is still wet, if you were wondering. And I was thinking about a team I was on last year, 2 years ago, pretty big, like enterprise type company. And there were like lots of different technologies used. It was the spirit in the air was more like, you know, we're general technologists, you know, like you could be put on a project and there's like Node, Redis, you know, you could be using who knows what stack, Elasticsearch, event sourcing, paradigms, microservicing, whatever, anything. Like we're all technologists. We use the modern tools. So whatever's available, that's, you know, it's at your, you can use that. But what happened is that like the guy who wrote the thing, he's the guy, you know, like, oh yeah, he wrote that. Yeah, he manages that because, you know, like there's a, kind of this lingering thing where like, yeah, I really don't want to crack open that box. I don't know how to write Elasticsearch queries. Like I don't want to go down, you know, so he's the guy who does all that. So that's just how it works, is everybody kind of gets grouped when you're using all those different technologies and tools and people are just sort of deciding for themselves. Oh, there was like an elite crew that like they were like the elites and they had to do this new project, so they wrote it in Go because they're like, oh, Go's the thing to do. And that was the only project in the company that was in Go, and they were the only people who knew Go, so they like kind of like were off here and everybody like supported them, but then they were the only guys who could work on it and whatever. So I definitely like firsthand experienced the whole like, whoa, if everybody just used Laravel, if everybody used the same exact tool set and just played by the rules, we could all like be useful and jump into anything, which goes against what my brain wants. My brain wants to do whatever the hell I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
and just, you know, add like use the tech that I need to use. I understand it. I'm going to work on it. Let me do it, you know? But anyway, so that's maybe a counterpoint for like general technologists, everybody expert in everything. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that vibe works up until a certain point, right? As long as you're like, and I know that like a lot of teams are remote. I work on a remote team, but like as long as you're like virtually sitting within arm's length of the person who wrote the code and you can just grab them and have them pair on it with you, I think it's like, yeah, do whatever you want. Like just grab random technologies and try them out and do whatever. As soon as you have like 40 people and like that person might be in a day-long meeting and you just can't have access to them and everything grinds to a halt because of the size of the company, then I think it's like you should standardize that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. There's so many micro like friction points within that. Like let's say that there's a new developer on the team and he's too intimidated to ask the, you know, the lead developer is the person who wrote the thing and he's just too intimidated or thinks he's too busy or, you know, whatever, just doesn't
want to look dumb
or doesn't want to look dumb. Yeah. Stuff like that. I mean, I remember being in that position totally that like, yeah. I mean, so I would just turn a blind eye to it. Be like, I don't know how that works. I just cross my fingers and hope that the next sprint I'm still on this project in this code base, you know, just be like, oh, if I can just stay in this code base, this is where, you know, I know what's up. I don't know what's up over there. And they're going to find out that I don't know what's up. And then I'm going to be found out, you know?
So do we talk about this enough? Do we talk about like, I feel like this is something we should talk about more on this podcast. Don't stop trying to be smart. Stop trying to pretend that you're smart if you don't know what you're talking about, because you create so many more problems trying to not get found out as being dumb than you do just asking.
For
like,
sure.
The number of times I've tried to like hide my ignorance about something, and like it always ends with a situation where inevitably I have to go ask someone, or I spend like 6 hours figuring out something that should have taken 10 minutes. Like, it's just like, just ask. Just go ask people questions. Grab people, get them to pair with you. Be dumb, don't know things. Like, and even on this podcast, like, sometimes Caleb will just be saying something, and I'll be like, and then I'm like, wait, don't Like, Caleb, stop, explain the thing to me.
Yeah,
it's just like, it's not productive at all to pretend that you know.
It's like not knowing a team member's name or somebody really close to you that you should know their name, and then you wait like a few weeks later, and the problem just gets a lot worse.
And it's too late.
And then you have to invent, like, strategies like this one that I have. When I have a really bad time with names, and so if I don't know somebody's name and then I need to learn it, absolutely, and there's no other way to do it but to ask them, I'll be like, I'll ask them something like, what's your name again? And they'll say, of course, it's, you know, Caleb. And you're like, no, your last name. You know, like, if that situation is appropriate,
clever, my friend.
And they'll go, Porzio. Yeah. And it's like, oh, good.
That is hilarious.
But it'd be better if I just remember the name, right?
Do you guys watch The Office? There's that episode where, like, the new boss is in and he doesn't like Jim. And Jim, he's like, Jim, I need these reports. Or I need you to run. I forget what it was. He's like, I need you to do a rundown. Yeah. He's like, I need that rundown. And he's like, and Jim just says, yeah, okay. And then he's like, what's a rundown? And the whole episode is Jim, like, kind of waltzing and being like, yeah, so with the rundown, are you thinking that you would want? And then he just kind of leaves it open-ended. And the whole episode is him not, and he ends up faxing his dad, like,
what is
like
a rundown?
Picture, like a hand-drawn picture or something instead of, yeah, so.
It's excellent.
It's like when in Seinfeld, if you've ever watched those, where Jerry doesn't remember Dolores' name, but he knows that her
like
name reminds
like a female.
With a female body part, it rhymes with that.
Mulva?
Mulva.
Yes.
You can also make like a funny joke about your driver's license picture and how stupid you look and be like, let me see your driver's license picture.
Yeah, stuff like that.
That's good too. Yeah. So David Hemphill, I have a question for you. You say you're not a good programmer. You just said you're not a good programmer. And I know, and then the example you gave is like, yeah, I didn't go to college, you know, like okay, come on. Like, you're, you know, I'm not a good programmer, I didn't go to college, but I work on X, Y, Z, you know, right. So I want to know for real, like, do you actually think you're a good programmer? And in what ways do you think you are and you aren't? I'm just going to go there.
I think I can get things done. One of my personal mottos is to learn everything that I can and use as little as possible. And so, like, I try to, like, be well-versed in all of the whole web development thing. And my personal, like, enjoyment comes from building a thing from start to finish. So, like, I don't like specializing very much, which means that I'm not, like, a master at any one thing. I'm just kind of okay at some things. But, I mean, I can get stuff done, obviously. I could build things like Nova and but there's a lot of times where I'm still looking through our source code, that the parts that Taylor wrote, and I'm like, I don't know what the hell's going on here. And like, I'm even
such
embarrassed
a bad
to
programmer
ask, like,
that like, it's you just can't even
talk. Yeah, like, I'm just not on this level. I have to figure out and go down the whole rabbit hole of how does this thing work? And
yeah.
But no, I don't think of myself as very good. I just am really persistent. And so I've done it for a long time and just layered on little skills that were hard learned. And then eventually I became dangerous enough that I could build stuff on my own without anybody else's help.
Caleb, I forget, did you graduate?
No, I dropped out as well.
So none of us have a college degree.
And we all dropped out too, right?
Yeah. I was dropped out.
We all were dropped out. Some of us were dropped out.
Yeah.
I was dropped. But yeah, college did very little for this podcast right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I dropped out. I was in a web application development course or Yeah, at tech school, I was on a web application development like pathway, and the instructor, the main instructor I had, worked at some big company in town that does mainframe crap, and they were doing a basics, HTML basics thing, and they were like, to make a list of items, you just create a bunch of break tags after every line, and I was just like, no, this is wrong, and so like. It just came to head that I could not like sit in a class where somebody was obviously so wrong about stuff and was working, had never worked on the web really at all. You know, they were more like Fortran and COBOL type programmer, but they were just teaching this HTML application development class. And so I wound up dropping out after that. Plus I was making money professionally already. So
yeah,
I decided to skip the whole degree part.
Yeah. Similar stories here, I imagine, for DCOL. I don't know. I don't actually know.
No, I just like wandered into a programming job from the restaurant industry.
So, but you were, did you program before tacos?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you did. Uh-huh. So you knew how to program in PHP?
Yeah, so my dad was a programmer.
Oh.
A long, long time ago. He wrote like C for the NSA. Mm. And so... At some point, I wanted to get a laptop when I was like 15 or whatever. Or like someone gave me a laptop, I think. And the deal was like, you can keep this laptop that was freely given to you if you install Linux on it and learn C. And so I did.
Wow, that's
And so my dad made me learn C. And it wasn't like I learned it well, you know?
Yeah.
I just learned like I think I made like a golf scorecard, like a terminal driven golf scorecard app for like when you have access to a terminal when you're golfing. Yeah. But like, you know, like you would put in like what the par of all the holes was and how many players there were, and it would just like sort of go and be like, what did player one get on hole one, what did player two get on hole one, what, you know? And like at the end it would calculate everyone's scores and print it out in a little table. And so like that was basically the extent of my C knowledge. And I learned some HTML and stuff. And I guess I made a couple sites for like my parents' friends and stuff. And then didn't really do much else. Got more into like having servers and stuff. Like I got real into like the like torrenting world and stuff. And so then I had like seed boxes and stuff.
Oh,
and
wow.
VPN stuff. So I was like,
you that seeded.
Whole, oh, I seeded
was just a
hard,
leech.
Dude. Oh no. I had elite status on some very prominent trackers.
Yeah, you got to keep that up, man, on those private trackers.
You got to do it. So anyway, that like led me back into programming a little bit, and then after college, I started freelancing a little bit. And
yeah,
Bob's your uncle.
And what? Bob's your uncle.
That's correct.
Uncle Bob.
He very much is your uncle.
Yeah, all right. So whip, convincing. Are you convinced to whip, DCOL?
No, but I'm convinced that David Hemphill's... I'm convinced that David Hemphill is doing a good thing by protesting in public. I'll put it that way.
That's very nice. I'm going to try out the whipping... It's funny because I don't have met like tons of arguments against it, but I still feel like it's crazy.
It feels wrong.
I have a ton of arguments against it for a team, but not for an individual developer, unless you're like psychotic like I am and need symmetry.
Like, so I'm working on Livewire right now, and there's been like tons of like rabbit holes that I've had to go down, and I've had to rip out things a bunch. And that's the part of me that's like, I'm kind of glad I know that somewhere back there, because multiple times I've told myself like, okay, like if I just remember that you went down this hole, and if you need to go back to it, it's in a commit, you know, over here. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of in the back of my head that I would be wasting a ton of time if I ever had to redo stuff. And if I had to find it myself, interesting. So if you need to find something, if I need to find something, I'm generally not looking through commit messages. I'm generally git blaming and finding a line or a file that I know is going to have the change somewhere ago because it's in my head, and then I git blame, then I find the line, and then I just go past down commits until I find the commit hash, and then I look at that commit.
Mm-hmm.
So one place,
right? Problem solved, right?
Yeah.
One place commit messages are dope is in any time that you have like automated deploys or something, and you want to see if the currently deployed version is the version you think it is, you can go look and it will tell you what version it just deployed. Because by the commit message. And if they all say whip, then you'll not know which whip it is.
I haven't run into this. Where are you seeing this?
I think Forge does it. I know Jenkins does it.
I mean, I hit deploy and I wait till it says deployed.
Right. But say for some reason, okay, say you didn't have automated deploys, I mean, right? So say you were deploying.
Yeah.
And you had deployed like 5 times that day.
Yep.
You know, and you just don't remember, did I deploy before or after I made this set of changes?
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
How would you know?
I don't know if I ever really asked myself that question, but do they show commit hashes on Forge in that interface or whatever?
I guess they do, yeah. So you would then have to go figure out what that commit hash referenced and what changes were in that commit hash.
Yeah.
So then you have to open GitHub to know that, whereas if you had just described the changes in some sort of a message appended to that commit, then maybe that information would just be right there at your fingertips.
True enough. All right. Well, I think I might whip in a knit. You also a knit, right?
Yeah. That's the only other acceptable git commit message is a knit.
I think you, Hempel, on your next project should just git commit amend to a knit the entire thing.
Just push just, force.
Just... one, yeah, it is git push force.
I like it. Wow. I mean, I like commits, but I don't necessarily like naming my commits. Naming is hard enough.
Yep,
there you go.
As it is, I'm usually just trying to find like the block of code that I know there was this huge, big red block of code in this commit, where there was, you know, like this little piece mm-hmm. over here, this little semicolon that I need to look at where that was, and
yep,
or I'm messing with this middleware, that kind of stuff.
Yep. Same here.
Mm-hmm.
Heard that. Anything else we need to cover here, fellas?
I got nothing.
We're good. Good podcast. Good chat. Thanks for joining us, David Hempel.
Thank you. Get yourself a hat. Get you a whip hat.
Yeah. So where does one find these whip hats?
Well, you can go to gum.co/WIPcrack. So. It's a Gumroad site, gum.co/whipcrack.
Sweet.
Whipcrack.
And you can also get the other controversial subject, Laravel Elite. You can get one of those t-shirts there too. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I'm always like poking the bear.
Yep.
You got to do it.
Is there anything you want to like rep while you're here? Any like, I don't know, sites and anything you want to say to our user to follow you or whatever?
I guess you could follow me on Twitter, where I'll occasionally poke the bear of elite programmers. Also, buy yourself a Nova license. I mean, couldn't hurt to have one.
Yeah, there you go.
Totally.
Or don't. I'm not your dad. I'll be fine.
That's great. All right.
Excellent.
Well, pleasure having you on, Mr. Hempel. Any other announcements we need to make here, Decole?
No, I mean, okay. So new feed, new podcast, new us, maybe give us an iTunes rating. I think there's only 2 right now. So that's good for us. I think there's some sort of an algorithm somewhere that cares about that.
Yeah.
Like, but I don't know what
everybody
it is
says,
or to what it,
like,
see, that's the thing. People say to do it, and that's why I think that it matters, but it might not actually matter.
Yeah, so iTunes, I just actually wrote a blog post that I'll get out there in a minute on how we came up with our logo. Like, I didn't actually tell Decole that I did. I told you I was going to do this, but...
you told me you were going to, but then you like to work in secret.
Yeah. So we spent an absurd amount of time designing this freaking logo. And I just felt like it would have all been wasted time if somebody didn't at least see how many logos we designed. Because there's really like 15 logos.
And it's funny because this logo looks like we like shit it out in 12 minutes. But
actually, David Hempel was one of the, you were like, I sent something to you and you were like, the illustration. And you're like, yeah, that's pretty sweet. If you like colored that up or whatever. I don't know what you said. If you like polished it up, colored it up, could be dope or something like that. And it kind of renewed my faith in it. And I was like, you know what? Yeah. This could actually be cool. And then we trashed it. And then we did a bunch of other ones. And
we came back.
And then we waited like a week and we're like, we got to get something out. And I was like, well, David and Hempel like this one. So, you know, we should.
Yeah, yeah. So
at least we got one guy who digs it. So
if you looked at the Push Silver logo, it's basically a circle. It's like a Pac-Man that's rotated to the 45 degree or negative 45 degrees. And then I had this one product that I worked on called Tint, and the logo was basically the word tint and a triangle. It was just a triangle. There was no like cutouts or anything like that. I love stuff like that. You just ship it, whip it.
Yep. Whip it, whip it and ship it.
Whip it and ship it. That's good. Yeah.
100%.
Dude, ghost riding the whip. Let's go.
Yeah.
Yep. Whip and ship. Love
I'm looking into starting another podcast that is related to this sort of area of programming to offer sort of an alt sort of view of programming.
The alt scene.
Yep. So
excellent. Just go follow David Hemphill and
yeah,
you'll
just go follow
it.
That guy. Yeah.
You'll find the stuff.
Quick little David Hemphill love monologue. I think you're like the sleeper of the Laravel community. Not that you're like asleep, but that like I don't know. Like there's a lot of other people who rep themselves a lot more and have like equal amounts of skill, at least as I see. So definitely follow David Hemphill because he's one of those guys. That you're like, oh, like you have all of these, I don't know, like things that you've done and ways that you do things that are like unique and awesome, but you haven't like blogged about them a ton and haven't, you know, told a bunch of people or written a bunch of courses. So you're one of those untapped minds that I'm like, oh, like this guy's got some value here. So go follow David Hemphill. That's the moral of the story. And that's it for the show. So thanks everybody for listening in.
Ba-da-ba-ba.
Bye.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. All right.
Bye.